Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Player's Voice, where this week we are joined by Cora Staunton. My name is Alan O'Mara. I'm the host of this podcast, a former Cavan goalkeeper, and now a performance and well-being consultant with sports and business leaders around the world. During this chat, Cora shares how she is managing the transition out of her 6-year spell as a professional athlete in the AFLW. Cora tells us about her work as part of the Galway Camogie management team this season, and her passion for mentoring, leading, and empowering the next generation as she looks ahead to the next chapter in her life. Cora also discusses why female intercounty players need to be better supported and the importance of players speaking up for themselves. As with all our episodes, The Player's Voice is brought to you by the Gaelic Players Association in collaboration with Real Talks. The podcast series is part of Bio 360, a GPA program that empowers intercounty players across 4 key areas: life skills, well-being, dual career, and transitions. Please go to bio360.gaelicplayers.com to learn more. To find out more about me or my work, please go to www.realtalks.ie. But for now, please sit back, relax, and enjoy episode 29 of The Player's Voice with Cora Staunton. Cora Staunton, you're very welcome to The Player's Voice. How are you?
I'm good, Alan. I'm good. How are you?
Things are very well. I'm keeping very well. And as know, I'll just from the off, I suppose I'll say this is not the first time we've had a conversation like this. I know I was thinking about it the other day. We first spoke back in 2017. And in some ways, you've gone on and had a whole separate new chapter to your life in that window. So I'm really looking forward to catching up with you and having this conversation. And I was just saying to you off air there, this whole series has been done in partnership with the Gaelic Players Association and the Bio 360 program, and those 4 key pillars of life skills, of well-being, dual career, transitions. And I'm very much looking forward to hearing some insights and nuggets you have in relation to those. So I'll kick off with transition in terms of, I suppose, my first question to you would be, you've made the decision to step away from life in elite sport in Australia to come home. How have you found that transition away from the elite game in Australia and then adjusting back to life here, where maybe you're not necessarily... your main focus is not pushing yourself to be the best that you can be on the field or in a game?
Yeah, I suppose I found the transition so far easy. And maybe that's because the season in Australia hasn't kicked off again. I think obviously that kicks off, pre-season kicks off at the end of May, and then games will start in August. So I think I'll probably find it a little bit more difficult in that regard when I see games going ahead and I'm not involved in them, and kind of the buzz of being back. You know, this time, this period is normally downtime anyways. While I'd be training way harder than I am normally now at this stage, I don't feel I've missed it. And I think that's probably because just what I said, but also I've, you know, came back, just a day or two before Christmas, and within probably 2 weeks being back, I'm involved with Galway Camogie in a team setting. And I think that's kind of taken away, missing it as well, because while I'm not playing, I'm involved with the team and around a team environment, and still doing that kind of Monday, Wednesday, Saturday in Galway Camogie's case. I'm still doing that. I'm still involved with, 35, 36 girls in the management team. And also I'm playing a bit of club football as well. So I feel I don't have time to miss it because of the two things I just said. And I think maybe when the season over there kicks off, that I probably will be like, oh God, you know, was that the right decision? But for now, I'm just too busy to even think about it, to be honest. So the transition so far has been fine. You know, I'm not struggling with it. But at the same time, I've been used to coming over and back from Ireland for the last five or six years, which I've been doing. So it's no different. I feel like this is the period that I'm normally home, and I wouldn't be in Australia anyways.
Yeah, so in some ways you've been kind of living like, I know I mentioned dual career, but kind of a dual life where you're kind of in Ireland for blocks of the year and Australian blocks of the year. Have you enjoyed that kind of, like in terms of the last couple of years, did you enjoy kind of, was it getting the best of both worlds? I don't know how you kind of viewed it, but kind of what was your mentality to that kind of experience of coming and going?
Yeah, it was. It's different. It's different in the regard my two lifestyles are, two quality of life was very different. Like life in Australia compared to life in Ireland are poles apart. When I am in Australia, it's plenty of time in your hands to the stage where you're wondering what you'll do. Very relaxed, just worrying about yourself and worrying about no one else. Just trying to get the best out of yourself. So you're just training, recovering, loads of downtime, you know, probably too much in my eyes because I'm not used to too much downtime. Where I come back to Ireland and the pace of life goes from maybe first or second gear in Australia right to, I don't know, sixth gear, where I'm just so busy. I'm just, being pulled and dragged in every corner and have very, very little downtime. You know, my days are so full. So, it's probably for my own quality of life. It's good that I had both of them because, you know, when I'm in Ireland for 5 or 6 months of the year, it's so, so busy. Then I go to Australia and all I worry about is just me and getting the best out of me. So I found that good. Certainly when I'd have done a stint here in Ireland, I found going back to Australia that I needed that time, both physically and mentally, just downtime for myself. And as I said, you're training and it's hard, don't get me wrong, but all you're worried about yourself, you don't have, you know, a lot of phone calls asking you to do different things, or you don't have, you know, 4 or 5 different jobs that you're trying to get done. You're just trying to focus on yourself and getting yourself better. And you train 4 or 5 times in the week and every other hour it's been for recovering, being ready for the next session, where that's not the case when you're in Ireland.
And I suppose on the Australian side of that equation, Cora, then, like, obviously you've made a decision to step away from the game. What was there any torn kind of feelings or emotions with regards to that? I know, like, as I'm listening to you there, you're talking about kind of having that time to be, you know, focused on performance, or selfishly almost, like it's a little bubbled kind of lifestyle. So was there any fears or any kind of mixture of emotions in terms of moving that one aside and kind of, or taking that out of your kind of yearly schedule?
Yeah, I suppose there's definitely a mixture of emotion. I don't know about fear. Definitely, because I obviously loved the lifestyle over there and I loved the challenge of trying to make myself the best athlete I could be. And, you know, and obviously you're 6 years over there, you have a lot of good friends and you've, you know, created a lot of strong relationships. So when you move back to the other side of the world, that's very difficult to, you know, continue with them, you know, friendships and relationships. While I do, you know, keep in contact with the girls, you're just not seeing them on a regular basis, or coaches, whoever it is. So that part, yeah, that there's certainly that emotional part. But I had that all the time when I was moving over and back. So, you know, when I came back home and I was settled, I didn't really feel I wanted to go back again. When I got out to Australia, I didn't feel I wanted to come home. So I had that emotion both ways, you know, certainly for the first few years. There was the emotion. There wasn't probably huge fear. I probably knew this season, out of any season, that you know, it was probably going to be my last. That said, if I had gone on, I could still probably perform to a high enough level. But I felt just the direction that the club was going in, and they probably, you know, we had a couple of years where we're doing really well, and it's kind of gone to a stage now where they're rebuilding and regrowing. And I knew that was a long, you know, that's going to take them a couple of years. And I knew I didn't fit in that because I wanted, you know, success and instant success, because obviously I didn't with age and stuff like that. So yeah, I kind of knew going in, you know, to the last season, you know, probably the way the direction the club was going, probably after the first couple of games, that was probably going to be my last season. But that being said, always as an athlete and a sports person, you kind of say, geez, maybe will I get one more year? Is my body willing to hold up? And I suppose when the off season came, the drive to keep yourself fit and having to push yourself and continue to push yourself in that off season. I think that's what a lot of people don't see. You have to do a tremendous amount of work in the off season to keep yourself in shape for the next season. Yeah, the drive and that wasn't probably there to go out five, probably evenings a week and push yourself hard on your own on a pitch here back in Ireland. So yeah, I probably knew it was coming to an end, but yeah, I suppose people have probably been trying to retire me probably for the last 10 years, I'd say, or more. So, John, I've been asked that question over the last number of years. So yeah, I felt like I was ready. So there was a massive fear there. There will be probably, as I said, when the season starts, there will be a bit of FOMO and I will miss it, of course, when you see the games back up and running. But yeah, I kind of knew that the really hard slog that you have to do in your off season, which is probably your off season is 3 or 4 months, just not having to do that. That's the one thing I don't miss at all. Not having to force myself to go to a pitch and do a 45-minute running session or whatever it might be. That's the thing I don't miss at all now.
Okay, so you kind of, in terms of your own self-awareness, kind of noticed that kind of change of if it was thinking or feeling around certainly that part of the season, Cora. And then I know you kind of mentioned there people have been trying, if you said people have been trying to retire you for 10 years or so. And I think you're someone who's always kind of embraced that kind of challenge or adversity to prove something to yourself or wanting to go again. And I suppose as you kind of reflect on that, like, is there anything else that kind of bubbled within you in terms of that change, that thinking or change, that feeling about going for 1 year? I know you mentioned the club there and the transition of the team. Was there anything else that kind of stirred up in yourself with regards to, like, why now?
Yeah, it did. And I tell you, the only thing that stirred it up was I was home and, you know, I knew leaving Australia. So I left Australia just before Christmas. I knew I wasn't coming back. But as a kind of club and myself, I just said to them, if they just leave to announce until I'm gone, because I just don't want fuss. I know if it was announced over there, the club would want to have, you know, big functions and stuff. And I'm just not into that. So I said, if you can just not tell anyone until I go, I don't want any going away parties or anything like that. And so that was fine. I said, once I'm home, I said, I don't mind when you mention it. And it just as it happened, it dragged on. So they didn't mention it for a couple of months till I'm home. But in that time that I was home, again, it was probably around March time. I won't say what club out there, but they obviously got wind or had an idea that I was thinking about retiring. They contacted me to see would I be interested in joining them. And there was a period there probably for a week going, oh God, or maybe I will, you know, maybe I can go back again and join a different club. And that played in my mind. I was kind of like, oh, will I, won't I, you know? And then in the end, I'm just too loyal. I'm too about, you know, the one club player. And, you know, I've always been about that here in Carnarvon. You know, I'd never, you know, play with anyone else or move to go with anywhere else. And that was the same, you know, even with Mayo, your loyalty is really strong. And I felt that if I was going to go to another club in Australia and play, it was only going to be for, you know, probably a season at max. And, you know, I just felt that the loyalty to the Giants and being a one club player and probably finishing on a high, you know, as in getting your 50 games and, you know, having another good season kind of was probably the right way to go. But there was for a period of time when, you know, that club and that recruiter kind of came wondering would I be interested. We did talk and, you know, I said, you know, I'll have a think about it and kind of went back and just agreed that, you know, I'm probably happy where I am and kind of was left at that. But yeah, there was a period of time when, you know, you have someone else that's interested and speaking very highly of you and being very nice to you, you know, about in terms of having watched you for the 6 years over there. There was probably a small period and that's just the competitor in you. And as I said, that was probably one of the bigger clubs that you knew that had a huge chance of probably succeeding. So there was a draw and I did certainly think about it, but yeah, I kind of just went down the line that, you know, you're going to a big club, you know, can you really give it your all? And did I want, at this stage, you know, I hadn't been training to a high level here at home, and did I want to, you know, probably go hard at it again? And yeah, it was kind of decided between the two of us that I'd leave it and they were probably better off going for someone that maybe would be more long term.
Yeah, do you think the fact that, like as I'm listening to you talk there, even the fact that there was that kind of conflict or that kind of inner dialogue for you, was that kind of almost enough in its sense to kind of bring your self-awareness around the decision? Because it probably in previous years, or like, you know, sport's always been such a huge part of your life, Cora. I don't think you'll mind me saying you're definitely a winner and someone who drives standards both for yourself and others around you. Like, there may be previous years, I don't know, where you just would have said, yeah, absolutely, let's buckle up and we'll go. So was even just having that conflict there, was that kind of a new experience for you in terms of being towards the tail end of like your athletic identity and from a like an active player side of things?
Yeah, I definitely think it was. And I found it like, and you know, it's no secret, I found this year at the Giants very difficult in regards to that terms, because we turned over a new coach. So I had the same coach for the first 5 years I was there. So we had a different head coach the last season that I played. And we had a huge turnover of players. And at that stage, we had a lot of youth brought in. And I just knew from early days that, you know, where this is really rebuilding, and you know, it was becoming, we want that competitive fire wasn't in a lot of them, and to achieve and succeed. And you know, I found that a struggle, you know, going out playing games where we're getting well beaten and we're not being competitive. Like, I don't mind getting beaten, but once you're competitive and you're there, and you know that if there's improvement that you can get there, but we were so far off. I struggled during the season you know, with that and with the team, because I'm just used to, you know, trying to not winning all the time, but trying to get to the top. And I just felt that we were falling further and further away. So like, the head coach knew I struggled with that. You know, I chatted to him about it, and he said, you know, there's obviously a different breed of player coming through, younger players. He said, like, you're the top. This is what professionalism is and what we want to get most girls to, but it's going to take so much time, you know, just because, you know, I'd be very much all the time out training, trying to get the best out of myself, trying to get that extra 0.5%, 1%, whatever it is, you know, all the time just trying to drive standards. And I just don't think the club was there this year with that and the change of coach. So I probably struggled with that. And yeah, that certainly during the season was the reason I'd said to myself, you know, I know this is the end. And as I said, then the option of maybe going to another club, it was just the whole loyalty piece. And you know, if I was young and I was going to go to another club for 5 or 6 years, by all means, I'd have gone there. The loyalty piece would have probably gone away, but I knew it was only going to be for probably another year. And, you know, really, what was I going to get out of it? Probably not a huge amount in terms of for myself. So I just felt, you know, it's a big thing over there being a one club player. I just felt that the Giants gave me the opportunity 6 years ago. And I just felt that I probably had to, but I felt that I have loyalty to the club, because, you know, I've obviously huge relationships built there. And, you know, I was made a life member before I came home as well, which is a huge honour that's bestowed upon a lot of players. Probably still don't understand the whole lot of it. But yeah, that was probably made my decision probably a little easier. You know, I've had a huge career over there, and, you know, I'm as well to just close this chapter now with being a one club player.
No, I gotcha. Like, I know for anyone that's not sure, like, you think you had 6 seasons there, right? And became like the club's all-time top scorer. You were one of the most dangerous and potent kind of attackers in the league. I suppose at a top level or a bigger picture, Cora, like, zooming out of it, how would you like overall reflect on your time there in terms of getting that opportunity later in life than kind of many others do get it, and then to have that kind of excitement and that challenge and to embrace it and go after it? And I know it wasn't without its setbacks in terms of injuries and different things that happened along the way, but kind of how, as you see her now, and you kind of, we're talking about processing those feelings and that conflict, and as you see here a couple of months on from the decision, how do you kind of reflect back on that chapter and that time in your life then?
Oh, I reflect back on it like, I'm so grateful that I got the opportunity, and for a number of reasons. You know, a couple of them I said already. Number one being the people that I've met and the relationships that I made along the way, and, you know, that I'll be friends with a lot of these people for life. And, you know, some of them have been over in Ireland and in Mayo already since, you know, I've come home. So that's number one. Grateful that I got the opportunity to see what it is like to be a professional sports person. You know, obviously growing up from a young age, I always wanted to be a professional sports person. As a 10-year-old, I thought I was going to play for Man United and I'm going to be Roy Keane. So growing up while I was playing Gaelic football, I always seen Gaelic football as professional, and, you know, it was a huge thing playing for Mayo and getting the best out of yourself year in, year out. But then to actually get the opportunity to go out there and be paid to play But it wasn't even the pay. It was to dedicate every day to sport and trying to get yourself better. And then the challenge of picking up a new sport, like going over there as, you know, probably a big enough person where a lot of people knew you over here and you had a good enough career to go into the bottom of the ladder and nobody knows you over there. And now you're going into a dressing room for probably the first time in, oh God, 20 plus years. And you know, nobody, every other dressing room I went into, you know, since I was probably 13, you know, that was the last time I went into a dressing room where I don't really know too many people. And yeah, the struggle for the first while over there, yeah, obviously people are not unsure of you. The Australians first year over were unsure of me, a lot of the girls, and what is she here and who is she and who does she think she is and all of that. And, you know, from the first couple of weeks that I was over there, really struggling, you know, being away from home, just won the club All-Ireland with Ciarán na Cun, sitting on the plane on 48 hours later after winning that, going, what am I doing? I should be, you know, out celebrating with the girls. And, you know, just that, like, well, that All-Ireland was really special. It was probably in some way, I was just, that 48 hours before I went, I was just like doubting myself, sitting on the plane, doubting myself why you should be going, too much time in my hands thinking for 24 hours, sitting on a flight and going over there. And the first month really struggled. And all of a sudden, then it just clicked. I don't know, we played our first practice match and, you know, I done quite well in it. And from there, you were kind of accepted. And yeah, the journey was huge after that. I only expected to go over for a year. And then I started to love it. And I love the challenge of, you know, being an average AFL player and trying to continue to build yourself as a better one each year. And I suppose then the challenges along the way I had over there when I broke my leg the second year when I was over there. And, you know, that was a huge challenge. But then that challenge, while I hated it every minute of it, I loved it at the same time, because that challenge of trying to learn how to walk again, learn how to run, you know, while it was excruciating at the time, it just taught me so much. And I was so appreciative of, you know, being able to get back and play at high level. And yeah, I suppose then, you know, they talk about games and records that you break along the way. But I just loved the excitement of being a professional athlete. And every day you're going out, every week you're going out to perform and get better. So yeah, I was just grateful for the opportunity. And, you know, at my age, I thought I'd get one season, never mind six. So, you know, to do that and to do it with a club that you love as well and people that, you know, as I said, that you love and have so much time for and now have built really strong relationships. I'm hugely grateful to get the opportunity and also to see now that, you know, from 2017 to now, you know, to see, you know, that we've, I think there's 32 girls will take part in season eight coming up is huge, and how the game has grown and how you have young girls now, whether it's down a local GA pitch or on social media, you know, text me and say, I want to play AFL. How do I get there? You know, and these are 15, 16, even younger, which is, you know, is mad.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. Our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Yeah, what's your kind of thoughts and feelings around that? Is kind of like you were, I think you were the first international draft player when the AFLW went, wasn't it? Right? Okay. Yeah. So like you've been a real trailblazer in that regard. And I suppose, what's it like? I suppose, I know sometimes you hear like media stuff or noise around like players are leaving and there's a talent drain here. But I suppose from a player's perspective and seeing younger girls go get that opportunity, Cora, kind of what's your thoughts around that in terms of like, what's driving the players to go and do it? And then kind of, do you feel like it's going to have a knock-on effect on like the standard of play here or games here?
Yeah, I suppose to answer your first part, you know, you obviously want to see ladies football, you know, still continue to strive and grow here. But if I'm asked by any athlete, you know, Gaelic footballer, whatever it might be, it could be a basketball or a soccer player, and, you know, you'll always get messages, what, like, do you think I should go? I couldn't but say, yes, I think you should go, because it's just a huge opportunity to be a professional sports person in a beautiful country, and, you know, just to get so much from it. And there's just a huge opportunity. So I find it very hard to say, no, it's not a good thing to go. So anytime I've been asked, you know, I'd just push that the girl that's going, that they're looked after in the best way they can be. You know, like any professional sport, there's contracts and, you know, how well you're looked after and all of these things. So any advice I give them, yeah, go after it, but make sure you're well looked after. I think that's huge. It's because of the limited amount of opportunity here from a professional sports person level. Now it's got better. Obviously, soccer across the water is, you know, semi-professional. You know, with rugby sevens, it's professional. Rugby 15s have come semi-professional. So there is more and more opportunities, but it's just there how the games can transfer, you know, how Gaelic footballers can transfer to AFL so much easier than any other sport. I think it's huge. So yeah, the opportunity is too hard to turn down. And I suppose you can see that by the numbers that are going. And also, do I think it'll have an effect, to answer the second part of your question on Gaelic football? I do think it'll have an effect. It's probably not having a massive one at the moment in terms it is and it isn't. But I think down the line, as the game grows over there and the season gets longer, and, you know, there's the aim to be fully professional, like them in by 2030, that's 7 years' time. But even in the interim, in the next couple of years, you know, there'll be more and more games. The season will be longer. That's, you know, they're getting ready for full professionalism. And, you know, girls then will be just tied to the one sport. You know, I think there's maybe 8 to 10 girls that are doing both, going over and back at the moment. But that's out of that's out of 32. You're still, some of your top footballers, the likes of, you know, Sinead Goldrick, you know, Anya Tighe, Ashley McCarthy, the two Kelly girls, you know, players like that, they're not playing the game anymore because they've decided to stay in Australia and further their AFL career and get better. So there is a loss to the game. You know, we're lucky that the likes of Vicky Wall, you know, Ashley Maloney, who will go out in a couple of months, them girls have stayed this season, but will they be playing Gaelic football in another couple of years' time? With the way the game is going, probably not. So yeah, you're losing your best stars. If you look at it at the moment, probably 6 or 7 out of our top 10 Gaelic footballers will be in AFLW in the season that's about to happen in August. So yeah, I do think in time it's going to have a drain on the game. And I think that number of 32 will increase over the next few years as well.
Yeah, because obviously, like, it's all happening in tandem where Gaelic football here and the standard has risen, and like, the quality of athlete that Ireland are producing has obviously risen as well from an athletic point of view. So if from on the Australian side, of course, it makes sense to look over and say, hey, that person can transition here. You've shown that. You're just one example of many that have already done it. I suppose then it kind of, is there any mixed feelings for, obviously, because you're one of the ones that's like literally been on both sides of it and experienced the good of both sides of it. Like, is there any kind of mixed feelings around, like, as Gaelic football in Ireland here is growing in popularity and crowd sizes and standards, that may then have a negative impact in terms of the quality and kind of the knock-on effect of the game here?
There's a little bit of mixed feelings, but I suppose I was just lucky that I went at a time that my Gaelic football career was coming towards an end anyways. I had won my All-Irelands and I had done everything I could, you know, with Mayo. I would struggle, I suppose, if I was trying to think if I was back to my 21-year-old self now, and I had to make that decision, and I was in the height of Mayo winning All-Ireland, it'd be a huge struggle and a huge decision to make. I'd really, really struggle to make it. And it's easy to answer now what you do because you're not sure. But I was so Mayo-orientated that if anyone had come ask me to play another sport, and, you know, this was a stage where, you know, you're getting opportunities during the summer to go to America and make a bit of cash, that I turned down summer after summer because I wanted to play for Mayo. So yeah, if I was 21 or 22 and it came calling, I couldn't, if I was trying to think back to that time of Mayo, I couldn't see myself going. So I'm just glad I didn't have to make that decision. You know, it is a huge decision. As I said, as time when girls can go over and back, it's not too bad at the moment. But when that stops, it is going to be a huge decision for girls. But you know, it's a huge opportunity. Some girls will go and make a full-time career out of it, as in they might last 10 or 12 years system. Some might go and try it for 2 or 3 years and come back again. it's going to be an interesting watch over the next couple of years. But I just know from the top level of AFL, from you know, obviously being in contact with them, they rate their Irish quite highly over there, and they think they bring a huge amount to the game. And they love to see them coming over. So yeah, by all means, from knowing a lot of them, you know, they're certainly targeting the Irish, and club managers over there, or club head coaches have been over. You know, I've known numerous amounts of them that have been over, and they're targeting the players because there isn't enough talent in their country at the moment. And even if there was, they just love the excitement and the difference that the Irish players bring. So it will continue to happen. I do worry a little bit for the game of Gaelic football and where it's going. And, you know, I've spoken up many a time. That's why I think that it's really important that they start looking after female ladies footballers a lot better than they're looked after now. And we don't need to go into it because we know all the problems and issues that are there. But, you know, and you look at it, Cavan footballers are a prime example. Ashley Sheridan yes. plays with Cavan. She plays with Collingwood. You know, and you know what they've gone through, you know, in the league and having to pull out because, you know, they're not getting basic expenses for girls that are travelling up and down from Dublin. Like, why would you want to stay around when you're not being looked after? They're not looking for millions. They're looking for, I think, €30 for a cover and petrol expenses. So when you're still talking about that in 2023, you can understand why girls would probably go, because, you know, it's just a huge opportunity and probably not being looked after very well in their own county.
No, I think that's a point well made, you know, and like it's very easy if it's from a media perspective or if it's an administration perspective to point the finger and say, oh, we're losing 30 people that way. And while they may be the best, like some of the best players, I suppose that there's hundreds or thousands that need to be looked after better. And that's what as you're kind of getting at, like facilitating for the many and doing a better job that if someone can split it, they will. But also practically, like, let's be real, like someone gets an opportunity to go and experience the lifestyle that you've described and those challenges professional. Like if a male player decides they want to play soccer in England or Australian football or in Australia, whatever it may be, like, of course someone's going to go and try and do it. And I think your point about, I suppose, like not using the people going away as an excuse to not drive things at home and standards is really important, you know. And I think we could go down a rabbit hole about all those kind of things with the Cavan footballers, the Kildare Camogie team right now. I suppose what I would ask in terms of the jump from when you left Cor, which I think was in, what was that, 2017? And to now, like, do you notice the increase in on the positive side, the kind of standards of play and provisions that players are getting? Or do you still think like it's in around the same, or kind of how would you look at that snapshot?
Are you on about in Ireland or
in Ireland? Yeah.
Yeah, I probably struggle a bit because obviously I haven't been around the scene. So it'd be just from talking to girls that I know are still involved in teams. And from being involved in Galway Camogie, I probably have a bit of an insight. Now, again, what Galway Camogie would have got 4 or 5 years ago are being treated, I'm not sure how that is, you know, I'd have to nearly ask. But from being with Galway Camogie, they're very well looked after. You know, in terms of when I went into this setup in Galway Camogie, first I was genuinely shocked how professional of a setup they had. You know, I thought it wouldn't be anywhere near the level, and that's coming off my, you know, time with Mayo and stuff like that. I was genuinely shocked at how well they're looked after. Yeah, there's always issues and there's things they can get better at, and pitches is probably their biggest issue in trying to get pitches. But everything else, they're really well looked after. From the point of view of ladies football, yeah, certainly things have got better from the point of view of training facilities, access to gyms and, you know, food and stuff after training and gear. These were, you know, small things we were fighting for, you know. For majority of my career towards my end of my career, you know, gear was a big thing that you get very little. Now I think that's not a problem anymore in most counties. But again, this is speaking from, you know, in terms of lady football, Mayo, they're a bigger county, and in Camogie, Galway are seen as one of the bigger counties as well in terms of success. You know, I cannot speak from a Leitrim football, lead from ladies football or you know, a smaller Camogie team that, you know, maybe are, you know, junior. So, but yeah, I think things have got better, but I still have a huge problem with the whole expenses side of things, that, you know, girls are driving halfway around the country and While they're being looked after in a small way, there's still a huge disparity in what a male intercounter player gets and what a female intercounter player. But, you know, they're still training at the same level. So from that point of view, that the whole out-of-pocket expenses, that's a huge problem. And the whole thing around health and how they're looked after, whether it's physio, scans, that type of thing as well, that whole system probably still irritates me. And how poorly that at times that girls are looked after. If you need to get a scan, how long you need to wait. And I suppose I'm coming again from a professional environment of being over there, that if you get an injury over there, you're looked after within 24 hours. If your scan got, you know, what's your problem? And there's no huge paperwork. So they're probably the two things. Again, I haven't been around the setup, so I don't know exactly, but from talking to girls, they're probably the two things that still need to improve. Pitches are always going to be a problem because of the numbers that are playing the sport at the moment, and weather in Ireland, that's always going to be an issue. But again, I think that's all, you know, down to obviously the GPA are doing massive work because they've integrated the WGPA and the GPA together. But I think it'll all come down to integration of the four or the three codes, GAA and Camogie and ladies football. And I think when that happens and they all come under the one umbrella, you know, and the decision making is being made from the top table by all three bodies, then I think a lot of these things will be resolved. But I think that's going very slowly, and I think that's frustrating. And I just hope that we haven't lost too many players in that period of time that they're trying to sort that out.
Yeah, I think, and I know something that comes to mind is, like, I know the ongoing stuff at the moment regards to just standardising the player charter and getting those basic conditions kind of set in stone across the different organisations to kind of iron out some of those kinks proactively almost. And then, like, you're going back to, as you said there, kind of getting those basic things right and those fundamentals right for people who will help keep players in the game. And that's what it's about, more so than the 15, 20, maybe going to Australia. I don't know if you agree with that or not. I think we're on the same page with that.
100%. And I think it's really important as well. I 100% agree with that. And I think it's really important that no matter if you're a Galway Camogie player or you're a Mayo ladies footballer or you're a Roscommon men's footballer or wherever you're from, it doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter how well your county is ran. Every individual that plays represents their county should be treated equally. So, and I think that's where there is, like, if and again, I don't want to speak out of turn, but I'm sure if you're talking to a Leitrim ladies footballer, I can just think of them in Connacht, or if you're talking to a lesser team in Camogie or so-called smaller, you know, junior or intermediate, they mightn't be as well looked after because, you know, the sport isn't as big in the county. You know, I just love to do a comparison of all counties and how they're looked after. I think that's the biggest thing, is that no matter what, you know, if you're representing your county at intercounty level, at ladies football, Camogie or hurling or men's football, you're treated the same no matter where you're from on the map. So I think that's a huge thing, because you look at Cavan ladies footballers, for example, Kildare Camogie players, they're obviously, you know, things are a lot worse for them than they are in the counties that I'm talking about.
What would you say to kind of, if any, particularly female players, intercounty players are listening to this call that maybe are dealing with that, like, inequality or substandard supports? And, you know, I think it's only human for a lot of people to start getting disillusioned or can get demoralised by it. I know you've seen in Cavan where people have taken a stand and pushed, or in Kildare there's been different issues, but kind of what would you say to the, if there is players listening who are starting to, maybe it's wearing them down or grinding their gears, what would you say to a younger player, you know, you think of yourself back 15 years ago, whatever it was, Cora, like, dealing with that kind of frustrations, would you have any advice for them?
Yeah, it's very difficult, and it does become very frustrating. And my biggest worry is that them girls then just walk away, because what's it worth, like, to them, if by staying there it's just creating so much, you know, anxiety, there's so much stress for them, and sometimes they just walk away in the end. And they have, you know. I think what it's going to take is, I think that if, you know, fair play to the Cavan ladies footballers for standing up. I think it's going to take a huge players getting together, and I just don't think it's going to be the female players. I think it's going to take a whole association, you know, of players, whether it's, you know, men's footballers standing up, you know, saying this is not good enough. It's the Cavan men's footballers in that case. And I think it's going to take a little bit of a push from the whole player movement to try and get things better, because it can become so disillusioned. And again, I kind of go back to, you know, what I've learned in Australia and see the bodies over there. You know, the PA is the players association there, and it represents both male and female players. There's no, like ourselves here, there's no disparity between the two. But, you know, it's small things that when, and again, they have issues in Australia. You know, at the moment, they're trying to do a collective bargaining agreement, CBA, and, you know, where, you know, men's, obviously the men's game is having huge, making huge revenue from in viewership and attendances over there, where it's not happening in the women's game yet, because the men's game is 100 plus years old, the women's game is 8. But the key men and players over there are, you know, given a bit of their, you know, salary, or, you know, what their percentage of revenue that they make from TV to the women's game to help it grow, because they know in time, give it another 20 years, it could be a huge success, but it needs that growth and it needs that investment. So there's, you know, huge figures of, you know, of AFL men, you know, that are high, very high profile over there that back the women's program. And the two teams, so if you have an AFL men's team and an AFL women's team, they're under the one umbrella. You know, they train in the same venue, they're looked after by the same organisation, you know, they're sharing the same facility. So I think it probably take in that regard that, yeah, I'd love to see that, you know, the intra-county men's, whether it's in Cavan or here in May or wherever it might be, or that they, you know, push and say, this is not good enough. We expect that our, you know, our women's intercounty players are treated better. I think that would be a huge step in the right direction. And I think it would put more and more pressure on the GAA and the three organisations to come together to amalgamate. So I think that there's more voice that we have and there's more said about it. Because in my time that I've been there, so much was just not said, and you just accepted it, and you said, you know, yeah, we'll go and fundraise ourselves, you know, we'll go and cook our own food, or, you know, we'll just train wherever, we'll train on a rugby club pitch, or we'll train with no lights or no showers, whatever. We just accept it. The longer you accept it, you know, you're going nowhere. So I applaud the likes of Cavan or Kildare or whoever might come up, because you need to hear more and more of these stories. And I think that if you have people that go and back them and push for more and more, and I know the GPA are doing that all the time and you know, are working really hard to get that. But I do think it'll take a big player movement to start pushing things and make it better. Because, you know, as I said, anytime I've talked about this, I was talking about this probably 10, 15 years ago, that players weren't being looked after. And, you know, while we've moved on, it's the steps that we're moving on and are way too small. You know, we're in 2023 now, and we've probably moved on 2 or 3% from, you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's definitely frustrating. I think the examples you gave from the Australian side there are something that's really progressive. If it is a cut of a share, I don't know how that can work practically here, like in Ireland, I suppose, in terms of if it's expenses or traveling expenses, making sure people aren't paying for diesel out of pockets, for example, you know. And I think there's
I think you can start here. Like, I think facilities is a huge problem, you know, trying to get pitches, and, you know, every club is training at the moment. I think, like, if you have an intra-county ground, that intra-county ground, wherever it might be, you know, if it's McHale Park, that wherever the Mayo men train, that facility is offered up to both the Mayo ladies senior team, the men's hurling team, you know, and Mayo have a junior camogie team, whatever. That facility is offered up to all four teams, and they're given an equal use of it. I think that's a place you can start. Yeah, expenses, that's a different story, because obviously there's money there and it needs to be generated and stuff. But I think you can start off with the basics. And I think that's one area you can start to look at. And that, you know, there, you have good facilities, whether it's pitches, gyms, and players are looked after. There's showers, toilets, whatever it might be. You start with there and then push, you know, for whatever it might be. As we said, the whole issue around gear and probably food, and that has been sorted. So facilities, expenses, and how you're looked after. You're never out of pocket for an injury. I think they're the three that you need to look at, and, you know, take one and fix it and then go after the other.
It's such an important point. And I suppose as well, when we're in conversations like this, we can get bogged down, or I can take us down all the, I suppose the messy stuff is the stuff that reaches media and reaches common conversation, and yes, highlighted them, and they're really important, and all those ones have to be pruned away, Cora, and dealt with, and we need less and less of that happening. But I suppose there is also lots of good stuff going on, and I'm definitely curious as to, we started the conversation around transition. I'm definitely curious to learn more about your role with Galway Camogie. Was that something that was pre-planned? What is your role there? How have you found stepping in? I suppose kind of rubbing your GI, the part of your athletic identity in a GA sense up in a different way. So maybe just kind of, I'll throw you an open question to begin with, just in terms of what that is and how it's going and kind of what's been happening there.
Yeah, so I suppose, no, it certainly wasn't an area that I was going to go into. That was definitely not. I was in Australia at the time and I got an email from Cathal Murray, who's the Galway Camogie manager, just basically telling me who I was and could he get my phone number? And I was like, yeah, no problem. So I gave him my phone number and he asked me, could he ring me one night after training and basically just spoke about Galway Camogie. He's obviously been involved for a few years and basically asked me would I be interested in coming in kind of performance coach role. And I was like, well, what does that look like? I know that's kind of a title that's been used, thrown around the GAA, but probably not fully comfortable with that title. And, you know, I was basically, well, in what regard would you want me to win? And, you know, as I say to him now, 5 months in the job, you know, there since kind of early January, I'm a jack of all trades. I kind of do a number of different things in there. So my role basically is I'm obviously a selector. I'm involved in team selection. I do a good bit of work with our forward group, you know, because obviously the principles of Gaelic football and even AFL are the same in Camogie. So, you know, do a good bit around them. And, you know, we've a couple of coaches in and, you know, some of this actual stuff that we're doing and the terminology we use is, you know, I've seen used in AFL and stuff like that. So from that point, that's one area. My other area is then just working with the girls individually and one-on-one. You know, we've girls that range from kind of 18 to maybe 35 plus. And, you know, they've all lives outside of Camogie. I think that's really important to remember, whether in some leaving certs, we've students, we've workers, we've all different. So just making sure that they have that, you know, their lives outside of Camogie are good and they're all in a good place outside of that. And then, you know, obviously work on their individual performances, how they're performing, how we can, you know, get them better, what they might need to get better at, you know, and you spend more time with others. You know, some of them probably don't need too much, others need plenty. And then obviously collectively working with the team, trying to make them, you know, more connected, more as a unit, both on field and off field. You know, just bringing a couple of things that I learned, you know, particularly from Australia, you know, around leadership, trying to develop, you know, we have certain leaders in our group, but trying to develop younger leaders in our group. So doing a wide range of things. And then I suppose I'm a bit of a conduit between, you know, the management team and the players, that a lot of stuff kind of comes through me that I'll bring to the management that kind of way as well. That, you know, taking a while, players obviously respect and trust you, you know, after a couple of months in there. So it's that kind of role, you know, it arranges. So I've, you know, every bit of role, but as you know, I attend all trainings, I'm there all the time. So yeah, I actually really enjoy it. I thought going in first, God, I'm not sure what I'm doing here. Probably the first session or two, I wasn't too sure, but yeah, after that, I actually really, really enjoy it. They're a great bunch of girls. You know, I couldn't say anything but good things. They're very driven. Anthony asked them to do, or Anthony, you kind of throw at them. They're very open to it. And like that, it's like being involved in any team. You know, while I was in Australia, I worked with a lot of our younger girls, kind of just fell upon me. You know, we've a lot of younger girls over there who are kind of 18 to 21 and all have moved interstate. So they weren't from New South Wales. And I ended up being a mentor for a lot of them and meeting them outside of kind of the football environment and just helping them with everyday life and if their struggles, if it was at football or outside their life. So I feel like I'm a bit of a mentor for a lot of our girls, young and old in Galway as well. Just, you know, struggles that they might be having or trying to get the, you know, the best out of them. And, you know, when they're at training, they're getting the best out of themselves. So yeah, the role is very varied, but Cathal gives me the autonomy and freedom to do whatever I want, really. So as I said, we have a very good management team. You know, we have a couple of coaches, a couple of strength and conditioning coaches, physios, dietitians, we kind of all work together. And as I said, I'm probably a bit of the liaison between them all. You know, if there's an issue, the dietitian or physio might ring me, and you know, I'll try and see how we kind of solve the problems if there's problems. So I hope that answers.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Good question.
No, it's a great answer, and it makes me want to ask about 10 more questions. But I suppose even I'm thinking of you, Cora, in terms of coming back. And we mentioned like transition at the start. And I had a quote written down here from when we spoke in 2017, and you said that sport is a drug. It's very difficult to walk away, and that will be a concern when I leave, filling that void. And I suppose I have that in my head, and as I'm listening to you there, in some ways, did it surprise you how all in you've ended up here? Or actually, in some ways, does it just make a lot of sense that you kind of got in and got that feeling and the connection? You saw it as an opportunity of kind of to manage that transition and to get some of the same feelings and maybe rewards just in a different way. I suppose I'll throw that over to you to see what you think of that.
Yeah, I definitely think it helps. While I probably didn't think that going in, I definitely think that, and that's what I said earlier on to you. I think that's helped me transition, because I'm still a part of that kind of elite environment, high-performing environment. While I'm not the person now on the pitch, I just have a different role within it. And I get you know, huge satisfaction. And I have throughout my career, and in Australia in particular, I get huge satisfaction out of someone that you're working with doing well. And as I said, it probably comes from the whole mentoring. And even towards the latter part of my career, when I, you know, probably matured a little bit through my career, like I got huge satisfaction out of girls doing well, especially people I was really close to or had huge respect for. And, you know, I go back to even 2017 with Mayo, like getting to an All-Ireland final while we didn't win at that time. We hadn't been in an All-Ireland in 10 years. The satisfaction... While I obviously wanted to get back to Croke Park and win in All-Ireland, but the satisfaction I got then of girls that I had, you know, soldiered with for a number of years that didn't ever get to Croke Park before, or didn't get to represent Mayo in All-Ireland, or didn't get to play in front of whatever that was there on the day, 50,000. I got huge satisfaction out of that. So I think towards the latter part of my career, I was getting satisfaction out of others doing well, but also having that competitive drive and wanting to do well myself. So I think that kind of transitioned then into Australia, where I done, you know, and, you know, my head coach over there, Al, would have always said, I've brought you over here from a leadership point of view and to create a culture where players can thrive and do well. And then I was kind of thrown into that mentor role, into a leadership group. So I think all of that has been then brought into Galway. And yeah, and I thrive, like, and they slag me now, like, you know, because obviously the Mayo-Galway rivalry is huge. And, you know, from a football point of view, yeah, we certainly never liked each other. So they slag me. And, you know, I remember certainly after a couple of games, you know, particularly I said to them after the league final, like, I'm so passionate about this team, even though it's Galway. And, you know, they love to see me go around the Galway gear. But I think you get so into it and so passionate because you're working with a group. You're spending so much time with them. I'm spending 3 or 4 nights a week, you know, a couple hours a week with them, you know. And I just think, yeah, you just get so passionate and you want to see them do well and you see how hard they're working. And I suppose you have that, you know. I was lucky, I suppose, because what I've achieved throughout my career, you know, you walk into a place like that and they probably have, I don't want to say instant respect, but they have some sort of respect from you from what you've achieved or what they've seen of you. And I think that helped me certainly going in. And, you know, that, you know, I had not instant respect, but that we had mutual respect then from there on. You know, I got to know them, and there's the trust and respect wasn't long coming and have it both ways. And I'm down in Nolan Park, and I think we score a goal, and, you know, or we win the game, or it's a close game, and down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, you know, I'm as excited that we've won than there as there on the pitch. You know, I'm trying to control my emotions up in the stand a little bit, but it does. It's because you're that type of person. Once you go into something, you're all in, and you want to see everyone doing well. So, yeah, I think that certainly helped me transition across, because I still have that kind of adrenaline and drive and that high performing environment. I'm still involved in it kind of 3 or 4 times a week.
It sounds like, listening to you there, and I know, like, I mean, you got a couple of smiles on your face as you're talking to, and I can kind of feel your energy pick up too. Like, it sounds like sport will continue to be part of your life in whatever guise, if it is, I suppose, in a backroom team where you're doing one-to-one and some of the stuff you've outlined. I suppose, is there any part of you that sees yourself maybe stepping out front down the line as a head coach, as a manager, kind of as you kind of take stock of all this in terms of backroom team and finding your role and a way to keep engaged with a sport that you love, but also, you know, be successful and help other people? I'd imagine that's all just bouncing around your head the last while, is it?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's a huge aspiration. Probably down the line, I wouldn't mind, you know, being involved in coaching whatever team it might be, a men's football team or, you know, a ladies football team, whatever it might be. I actually like, though, at the moment that I'm learning the intricacies of a high-performing management team, because, you know, I do slag, you know, Cahill, and, you know, we talk on the phone enough for, but I've been learning a lot from how you put together a really good management team. So I said to him, well, you've definitely taught me that delegation is the number one key of being a manager of any team. Or any, like, we laugh about it, but it's true. The people that you have around you is hugely important within any management team. And I learned that. And if I ever did go in time into management, that'd be the first thing. I'd be putting people with me that are, you know, I trust and will challenge me and help me. But, you know, we'll ultimately have your back, with that you trust and certainly challenge. Like, there are two huge areas that we have in Galway, Camogie, and I think that's hugely important. So I feel I'm just learning, and, you know, we have a couple of coaches that are involved with Galway, Camogie. And as I said, while the game is different to Gaelic football, the principles are all the same. And even while I'm learning from them, you know, what small bits you pick up, because you're training on the whole time, is massive. You know, I'm learning so much, you know, from Cahill, but also our coaches and how they go about it and how the whole system is ran. And because I think when you're in it yourself and you're playing, you probably don't take it all in. You're just worried about that training is done, you're training well and everything's there. And, you know, when I was at Mayo, yeah, I can certainly remember, you know, the really good coaches that I had and how they ran it and why we were successful. But I think when you stand back and you're there and you're not involved in playing, I just think you learn so much more. And yeah, I think with Galway, Camogie, and certainly over in Australia, again, it's a different sport, but the principles are all the same. I've learned so much from the setups from our head coach in Australia and from Galway, Camogie already, that I hope, yeah, in time, if I do go into management, and, you know, I'm in no rush certainly to enter it, that I will have had a huge amount of experience and learning from both Australia and what I'm doing now.
Brilliant. I know, I definitely, and it sounds like as well, like you're kind of using that as a kind of a little apprenticeship in terms of widening your perspective and seeing some of the, as you said, like the intricacies of like a backroom team and the delegation and stuff that when we're all players, we don't like even, doesn't even cross our mind. You're just like, I'm going to tell that person what I think now soon enough. I suppose.
Yeah, but I also think you learn a lot. Sorry. I think you learn a lot. And what I've like, you learn a lot about the athlete as well and the player, because, you know, when I'm playing, I'm focused on me, but now I know a huge amount of the player, and, you know, I've learned so much about, you know, especially female athletes, and, you know, you expect them to be full of confidence and full of self-belief, and it's the opposite, and trying to find out why, and you just learn ways of dealing with certain players. You understand that certain players that, you know, they need a huge amount of encouragement, you know, arm around the shoulder a lot of the time. There's certain players that are motivated differently. They don't need that amount of encouragement. They might need it the other way. So it's to find the balance and, you know, how they're driven. And that's very difficult when you have 36 players to find out, you know, how is she driven? How do I work with her? How do I get the best out of her? And when you spend so much time with them individuals and you sit down with them and you watch the way they go about themselves, it's amazing. So I think as a manager trying to figure all that out and have the logistics running everything else and running the sessions, it's very, very difficult. And I suppose if you have a backroom team that can help you with that, it makes life easier, because female athletes are different in ways to men. You know, we have to say it, you know, they're different to deal with them. You know, they need loads of information. You know, they're sensitive to the way that they're spoken to. Not all, but some are. So I think you just learn a huge amount. And that's what I've learned with so far from working with the players, that, you know, you have to treat each of them individually while it's a collective game. But if you want to get the best out of them, you have to figure out how they're driven and how they're motivated. And yeah, it's an interesting task doing that.
No, it's such a brilliant insight. And I know, like, from my own work on a day to day, like, especially when I'm dealing with head coaches, like, sometimes we talk about, like, it's like trying to put together a puzzle that's constantly moving, because even you get a couple of pieces slotted in over here, but then something happens with someone else and that knocks a couple of different things out of the way over there.
100%. Or someone says something and you're wondering, why did you say that? I've spent 2 weeks just getting them to base level, and now they're back down again. So yeah, it's brilliant though. It's a great way of work, and as I said, I'm very lucky with Galway that, you know, Cathal just gives me the freedom to do whatever I want, and you know, I can challenge him, he can challenge me. We can all our backroom team can challenge each other, and that's what you love. That's, again, I suppose I've spent my year thriving off challenges, and I suppose this is probably another way of getting it.
No, it's brilliant. I suppose also I can't go without asking, like, are you still playing a bit with the club? Are you still planning to play this season? Like, where's your kind of head at with talking out and playing still?
Yeah, I've played a couple of club matches since I've been back. I'm trying really hard to play. I'm probably just not getting in the level of training at the moment that I'd like to be getting in, just because life is so busy. I'm spending so much time in my care. But yeah, I'll certainly, you know, championship doesn't kind of start really in Mayo till late August, early September. So yeah, we've league football going on. I'm trying to, you know, make as much games as I can. It's not always possible, but I'll certainly contribute in some way. I hope come later in the summer when, you know, Camogie is finished and, you know, RT isn't as hectic and things like that, I'll have more time to kind of look after myself. But yeah, no, I will certainly try and give back as much as I can to the club for as long as I can. You know, it is more difficult, to try and get to get out and run and do all your sessions. You know, I do try and get there, you know, when I can, but it's just not possible. So yeah, but I'll certainly be contributing. As I said, you know, I've played a couple of matches with them, and yeah, certainly come championship, I hope to be back in full swing with them.
I know, like, and you mentioned there, like, giving back to the club, Cora, like, but I suppose I'm also would wonder as well, like, are you still enjoying the act of playing the game? Like, when you talk out and you play, are you still feeling that kind of, that joy or that kind of fulfillment bubbling under the surface, or kind of where are you at mentally with, I suppose, playing Gaelic football right now, having had the last couple of years that you've had?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't say I enjoy it as much as I used to, for sure. There's a certain amount of enjoyment. The enjoyment is probably going and just keeping yourself active and keeping yourself fit. Obviously you'd like to go out and compete and win, and you do when you go out there. But, you know, I probably know I'm not as good as a Gaelic footballer as I was 10 years ago. So there is a level of, there is a certain level of enjoyment. There probably isn't the same level of enjoyment there was 10 years ago when I was playing it. Just because I know myself that throughout my whole career, to give it my all, I need to be training at a really high level, and I need to, like, for me to be fully prepared, if I was playing AFL or playing Mayo football, I needed to be training, doing every training session, attending every gym session. You know, people ask me, how did you know you're ready? That's how I knew I was ready. So I probably find that, you know, when I cannot give it, you know, everything, be at every training or do everything I can, then I probably know I'm not fully fully contributing like I'd like to. But at the same time, you know, we've a lot of young girls in the team. Again, you're trying to mentor them, you know, trying to help them get better. Like that, you're just trying to help the club get better. Yeah, there is certain enjoyment. There's enjoyment, yeah, obviously, if you win or you perform, it's probably not enjoyment the next day when you're trying to get up out of bed and you're as stiff as a poker. But yeah, there is a certain amount. There's probably not, when I was in the height of my career, but sometimes you just have to, give back to a place that's given you so much, even if the enjoyment level isn't, a 10 out of 10.
No, I get you. And I suppose, as I'm listening to you there then, is it fair to say that there's no secret ambitions or something bubbling in the back of your head to try and play for Mayo one more time? Do you feel like that chapter of life is fully closed?
Yeah, that's 100% fully closed. It's closed. Jesus, it's mad that I still get asked this question. I'm gone from Mayo, 5-6 years at this stage. So yeah, there's definitely no ambition to go back. Yeah, that chapter is well closed. I enjoy watching games, and I probably don't get to anywhere near as many games just because my schedule go with Camogie and Archie is it's all weekends and gone. But yeah, no, I, enjoyed, obviously watching Mayo Ladies. Again, I didn't see it. I just seen it on the live stream because I was in Archie that day, beating Galway in the Connacht final. So yeah, no, there's enjoyment to watching it, but no, it's trying to explain to people to having to go and get yourself to that level. I wasn't ever the most athletic player where, fitness came to me. I have to work really hard and staying fit. And I'm not the one that likes, running around doing a 2K time trial. I hate it. So for me to stay fit was difficult. That was the most difficult part of my career, was constantly to stay at a high level of fitness. So it meant training 12 months of the year. When everyone else was having 2 or 3 months off, I couldn't afford to have it off because I wouldn't go back in January or in Australia. I wouldn't go back in pre-season in good shape and I'd be always behind the eight ball. So yeah, I don't miss, I still run and I don't mind doing smaller, sharper sessions. I don't miss having to go out and knowing a really hard session and go to that dark place where you're pushing yourself and you absolutely have nothing left. So I don't miss that at all. I'll never do a marathon or anything like that because that is not me. But I that's one thing, if anyone asks me, I don't miss having to try and go to the local pitch and train four or five nights a week to be ready to go back out to Australia. So yeah, that's one element I don't miss at all.
No, I appreciate that. And the only reason I actually asked you the question was when I was reading your book and then when I was looking up stuff online, I know the Giants announced your retirement, but nothing ever popped up that you'd retired from Mayo. And I didn't know whether I just wanted to make sure there was no buried secrets there. There was a cat in the bag
out. Yeah. I'm probably just a really bad social media person, to be honest. Certainly that chapter is closed. As I said, and it's been suggested in the last couple of months, you're not the only one. I'm 5, nearly 6 years out of playing intercounty football. I think no matter who you are, you're never going to be able to come back to the level that you went at. And I've just been very lucky. I finished my career, still playing at a high enough level. I felt that I was still contributing, whether it was with Mayo or with AFL. I was still contributing at a high level, still starting, still playing. So and that's kind of the way I wanted to end, that I was, not one of these players that are just hanging on, maybe getting 2 or 3 minutes at the end of the game. I knew going out that I was, still contributing highly. So that's the way I always wanted to end it.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense in terms of ending it on your own terms, but also probably getting ahead of maybe the game starting to sour in your mind in terms of your enjoyment. We said about enjoyment there, and then just starting to feel that certain things are waning or just having that kind of creeping in. And I think that makes a lot of sense. And we always when players retire in different ways, there's always different ways to do it, and there's always different ways to close that chapter. And the main thing is you find out, or you do it the way that works for you. There's no set template to follow. And I think kind of pivoting just towards the end, and we've talked about the Australian chapter. We've talked about coming home with Galway Camogie. Can I just ask then kind of what else is going on in life right now in terms of that transition? I know you mentioned you're not going to be one of those to do a marathon and to take that on, but I suppose kind of what are the kind of couple of other pillars, Cora, in life and as you kind of adjust and transition and set up for the next chapter?
Yeah, I suppose, for me now it's hectic now, but I suppose down the line, I hope to go back and probably do a couple of different courses in areas that I'm kind of interested in, and that kind of performance coaching, psychology of sports and of a player, that type of stuff. When I get a little bit more time, I'd certainly like to, you know, go into that a little bit more, because I think you should be always learning, and you know, life is to try and get as much information, and you're never like your playing days. You're never, as you know, you're never at the top, but you're never reached perfection. So you always want to get better. So yeah, certainly when I get time, I'd like to do a couple of courses in that. Yeah, and I suppose down the line, while I still think Australia has, you know, a part to me as well, I'd like to get over and back there. You know, I do hope to do, you know, some sort of work with the AFL, and you know, I have numerous, as I said, kids or girls or, you know, teenagers, young adults on to me about the whole transition and trying to get across there, you know, help them if that's what their goal is, you know, help them, you know, to try and reach that goal. So yeah, there's a mixture of different things. I do see myself trying to get over and back to Australia at least probably once every 12, 18 months and spend a little bit of time over there, and again, learn a bit more about the game and the coaching side of the game over there. So, because as I said, a huge amount of stuff that I've learned there I've brought over already, and I think there's a huge amount to learn as well. So yeah, I do see my role will always be somewhere within sport, what area of sport, whether it's coaching, performance coaching, whatever it might be, if there's a broad area that it can cover. But I do see that I'll always be involved in it. Yeah, and as I said, trying to give back to people, I suppose, is given to me, whether that's club or, you know, different people. You know, your phone and your email or your WhatsApp is always busy asking you to go to different things, whether it's talks, presentations, training sessions. I'm one that's not very good at saying no, so I probably try and get to as many of them, try and give back to, you know, both codes, whether it's AFL, you know, or Gaelic football. So yeah, that's probably what the next short term or medium term looks like. And yeah, just kind of enjoy that I don't have to push my body to limits that probably at times didn't enjoy being pushed at. But yeah, that's probably, as I said, the short term or medium term future for me. And after that, we'll see. But yeah, certainly, you know, what I'm doing now is what I'm enjoying. And obviously the punditry and stuff with RT, you know, I really enjoy doing that. You know, learning more about the game and the in-depth analysis and stuff. Yeah. So everything I'm doing at the moment, I'm really enjoying and will continue to try and get better at every aspect of that.
Amazing. I've no doubt, like, just again, I hear the passion from you there and kind of the drive to, if it's find new roles or find a new way to kind of to push yourself, to challenge yourself. But it also sounds like some part of your career or kind of next chapter in work is going to be helping others kind of unlock themselves or push themselves. I suppose just as I finish up and kind of the last one I have for you, Cora, is just like, and I purposely didn't take this conversation back to all like the Mayo days and the playing days, because I just kind of out of respect for what you've been doing since then and kind of where you're at right now. And I kind of wanted to dig into that more so. But kind of as you look back on it all and just kind of from the athlete side, both with Sydney, both with Mayo, like how do you look back kind of on what you've achieved and the legacy that you leave behind from like the active playing side?
Yeah, I probably struggle at that. Like, you know, people are like, you're a trailblazer and legacies and all that. Oh, like all I did, I suppose, when I started to play and you know, play at a high level, whether it was with Mayo or, you know, finishing it with the AFL, with the Giants, is just that I wanted to try and get the best out of myself every time I went to training or, you know, play a match. I'm very much one of these people that, you know, try and max out at every session or every game and try and get the best out of myself. And, you know, I probably felt that I did that, and you know, whether it was with Mayo or Carrickon or the Giants or, you know, the bit of soccer or rugby I played in, you know, you try to help make people better as well, to, you know, whether individuals or collectively as a team, you're trying to make, you know, everyone better. So I suppose, you know, I've been asked this question a number of times. I probably look back at my career and I'm just really grateful and blessed that, you know, I've had such a long career in sport. You know, and at times, you know, when I'm talking to kids, I kind of say, you know, your career can go really fast. And then they kind of look at me, well, yours didn't. But I'm just like, I'm just blessed that I, you know, got the opportunity to play multiple sports, got the opportunity to play professionally, got the feel for what that was, obviously got to win All-Ireland with Mayo. And yeah, just, you know, have a huge impact. And I suppose I'm quite humble. I don't like all the, you know, the accolades and stuff that comes along with it. But I do hope, and you do know, that you inspire the next generation of male and female, you know, kids, you know, over the last how many, probably 20 plus years that you've inspired them to see that they can be who they want to be within sport. And, you know, I know I did that because you get plenty of messages, whether it's letters on social media or whatever it might be. Or I suppose that you've done that. You've inspired the next generation to achieve whatever they want to be. That anything's possible. You know, I was always like that. Anything's possible. You know, as I said, as a 10-year-old, I wanted to play for Man United. At the time, it wasn't possible, but my Man United ended up playing with the Giants in the AFL. But, you know, I always tell kids when I go and talk to them, you know, make sure you dream big, and whatever your dream is, go and chase it, because it's always achievable.
I think that's a perfect note to end it on, Cora. I just want to say, for me, thank you for taking the time to talk to us today on The Player's Voice. Thank you for your honesty and your insights. And I mean, genuinely, like, for all that you've just talked through there in terms of kids over the last 20 years, by all means, congratulations. But I think it's really exciting to hear you talk about the next chapter and how you're going to find a new way to evolve and to do your thing. And I think the word enjoy popped up a couple of times, and people sometimes talk about transition as if you're like, yes, stuff is being left behind, but you're also moving forward. And I wish you the very best of luck with that chapter. It sounds like it's an exciting one for you, and I'm excited to see where it takes you. So thank you, Cora. I really appreciate it.
No bother, Alan. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for listening to the latest episode of The Player's Voice, which is brought to you by the Gaelic Players Association in collaboration with Real Talks. To listen to previous episodes with leading inter-county GA players like Patrick Horgan, Niall Morgan, Leah Caffrey and Ashing Thompson, make sure to subscribe by searching The Player's Voice on whatever podcast platform you prefer. And while there, you would really be helping us out if you rated or reviewed the show. My name is Alan O'Mara. And to find out more about my work as a performance and wellbeing consultant, go to www.realtalks.ie. You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram if you have any feedback about this episode or want to suggest any future guests. And please don't forget, you can find out more about the GPA's BO360 program by visiting bo360.gaelicplayers.com. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.